Okay, let's just calm down, everybody. Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparian on a lovely Wednesday evening across most of the country. So, is there a show we don't have Trump nonsense in these days?
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's par for the course now, and you can expect it. There's all sorts of news, but I gotta be honest with you, my absolute favorite story of the day is in hour two, where we will discuss people who refuse to vaccinate their dogs over fears of autism.
The dog is going to be autistic,
yes.
And we would know how. All right, we'll save that conversation later.
So okay. Good, you don't wanna miss it.
Okay, one of my favorite stories is a little bit later in this hour. Donald Trump's new, very specific lies. Like, it is about a certain genre.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. He is amazing. All right, and if you guys are saying, well, sometimes we get the criticism from time to time that we've covered too much Trump. I don't know if you know this. He's the president of the United States. Okay, mm-hmm. So with that depressing thought, we move forward. What's up first, Anna?
All right. Donald Trump and two Republican senators have unveiled their version of limiting immigration in the United States. And this goes further than just building a wall in the southern border. What they're now planning on doing is making it extremely difficult to obtain a green card. So they are limiting and capping legal immigration, sort of. So I'll give you the catch to this story in just a second, but first let me outline what they're doing exactly. Trump announced the Reforming American Immigration for Strong Employment Act on August 2nd, which aims to cut immigration by half from the current level of more than 1 million green cards granted per year. The legislation would mark a major shift in US immigration laws, which over the past half century have permitted a growing number of immigrants to come to the country to work or join relatives already living here legally. So one caveat to this policy would be the fact that minor children and spouses would still be eligible to apply for these green cards. So if it is a minor child living in a different country who wants to reunite with a parent who's living in the country legally, they would be able to do so by applying for that green card and hopefully getting approved for it. Now, let's hear from Trump. He was joined by Tom Cotton and David Perdue, the two GOP senators who worked on this legislation. Let's take a look.
This competitive application process will favor applicants who can speak English, financially support themselves and their families, and demonstrate skills that will contribute to our economy. The RAISE Act prevents new migrants and new immigrants from collecting welfare and protects US workers from being displaced.
So I want to weigh in on why this is a huge hypocrisy, or shows the hypocrisy of the conservatives in a second. And also the two things that are driving the two decisions you're going to tell us about. This is the first, and then there's a second that is kind of ironic on the same day.
Right. Well, it actually wasn't decided on the same day. You're talking about the
yes.
increase in the cap. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating that he is, you know, using all this tough talk, and you know, the GOP is saying, no, this is a great idea because we have American workers who need jobs, and unfortunately those positions are being filled by foreigners, and we just can't have it. We need to look out for Americans, America first. However, very recently, Donald Trump decided to lift the cap on foreign workers coming into the United States to work in, you know, the fishing industry, in some other temporary jobs, seasonal jobs. So I'll give you the numbers on that. So the Department of Homeland Security actually raised the cap on what's known as H-2B visas for foreign guest workers. It was originally 66,000 a year, and they increased the number to 81,000. A couple days after the Trump administration did that, guess what Trump did specifically? Just 3 days later, Trump's properties told the Department of Labor that they wanted approval to hire 76 guest workers using those visas. But what about the American workers? I mean, they're very concerned about the American workers. And here's the thing, like, if they were genuinely concerned about American workers and they provided data and statistics indicating that this policy would help Americans get jobs, this policy is not done for xenophobic reasons, then I'm willing to have a conversation. I think that that is a legitimate concern. But when the numbers don't add up, and when they say things like, oh, they need to be able to speak English and they have to have good education skills. I mean, it's pretty clear what they're trying to do. They're trying to paint these individuals as, you know, illiterate individuals who want to come here and mooch off the system, when that is the furthest thing from the truth. And the Trump administration likes to use foreign labor as well. So
yeah,
we know what the reality is.
Okay, so first of all, I would love to see if Trump could pass those English tests that he's referring to for the immigrants. But to the heart of the issue, remember all the times the conservatives said, no, this is not about legal immigration. We're just, I mean, we gotta be a country of laws. We gotta have a border. If we don't have a border, we don't have a nation. So this is all about making sure that there is not undocumented immigrants, or what they would call illegal immigrants or illegal aliens. But no, we're not racist. It has nothing to do with Latinos. It has nothing to do with any of that stuff. You liberals are making that up. No, we're to love legal immigration as long as you are following the laws. Turns out, just kidding, we don't really like legal immigrants either. So we're gonna take the number of legal immigrants and cut them by half. Now there's a couple of reasons we're gonna do that. We claim it's for the American worker, but I mean, this thing that Anna just told you about how Trump, when it comes to his own properties, is bringing in foreign workers. That's it, I'm not having a conversation about American workers and whether Trump cares about them anymore. I'm having a conversation about how we can actually help American workers,
right,
but not what Trump's intent is. Trump's intent is politics, and when it comes to actual jobs, he's like, no, I'm not gonna hire Americans, they cost more. No way, hey, that's for you, that's not for me. So there's two real motivations. One is pander to your base, and hence the pander bear. Healthcare was a disaster. I've accomplished nothing, but don't worry, foaming at the mouth conservatives, I still hate brown people, and we're just kidding about it being illegal. We don't care about that at all. We just care that they're from different countries, they're foreigners. And the second part of it is that politics. So if these people eventually become citizens, well, minorities are more likely to vote Democratic. Immigrants are more likely to vote Democratic. So here's a genius idea for the Republicans. Let's cut off immigration. Right. Who cares that it damages the economy, it damages the American idea, goes against the principles of the Statue of Liberty. Don't care. I care about winning elections and scoring points with my base.
Right, exactly. And I love the point that you made about him pandering to his base, because look, even if you are a little more open to the Trump administration, you have to admit that there is a pattern, and this pattern has been so obvious, especially in the last 2 weeks. Okay, he fails when it comes to repealing the Affordable Care Act. He immediately goes off and tweets in the middle of the morning, early in the morning, about how transgender individuals are now banned from the military without advising anyone, letting anyone know that he's gonna do it. It was pandering to his base. And then fast forward to this week, here's what he does, when really behind the scenes, he just applies for more foreign workers to come and work on his properties. Why aren't you employing American workers? Again, I wanna be clear. I think that we need to have an immigration policy that makes sense, that not only benefits people coming into the country legally, but also benefits Americans living here and doesn't hurt them. But this discussion is clouded in so much xenophobia that it's difficult to take anything that he says seriously.
So on the issue of legal immigration, there are conclusive studies that show that they overall add to the economy not only, you know, there's all talk about taking jobs, but a lot of them wind up becoming entrepreneurs that create more jobs here in America. So, and then the other part of it is that also studies showing that on average, legal immigrants commit less crimes than the average American.
Right.
So all those excuses are washed away. This is just about, we don't want foreigners in the country. And it's basically as simple as that. But on the issue of the actual jobs, I'm with you, Anna. I'm very curious about that. Mm-hmm. I wish I had access to all the information that the president has, which I'm sure he has not utilized at all.
Yeah.
But in terms of, they brought in all these workers partly to work on Trump's properties. Yep. Okay. So on their issue of their hypocrisy on the workers' visas. But so there's a seafood processing plants in Virginia, and they're worried that it might be already too late. They applied to get more workers because they need them, because they couldn't pick the crabs, shuck the oysters, pack the bait. There's refrigerating the seafood, there's hauling, etc. There's all this stuff. And so Americans can't do that. I mean, of course they can do that. So, but it's a tough job, and I guess, but that's not, that's a normal blue collar job. I'm amazed that we can't find Americans in Virginia to do that job. So, which of course means, no, we just can't find Americans at the price that they want to pay, the wages they want to pay.
So that, yeah, and that is an interesting perspective, and I looked into that as well, because look, if you're looking for cheap foreign labor, well then yeah, of course you're not going to want to hire Americans and pay them a fair living wage. But you know, to counter that, there was a farmer, a grape farmer in Northern California, Napa Valley to be specific. And so he wanted to do right by Americans, and he wanted to increase the wages and provide benefits so he could attract American workers and rely on them. And so he increased the wage to $16 an hour, which is pretty good, mm-hmm. and offered benefits including a 401k and health insurance. And guess what? He still couldn't find Americans who were willing to do the job. And I'm not making this up. The Los Angeles Times wrote about this. The New York Times wrote about this. It was, you know, part of something I found during my research for my debate.
So I know, and there's the cases in down in the South, actually, ironically, in the states of, I believe, the two people who were introducing this bill with Trump, Purdue, definitely, in Georgia, they tried it once, and Tom Cotton's from Arkansas. And they got tough on illegal immigrants. In that case, it was undocumented and not legal. They kicked them out, and then the factories almost closed down and went to bankruptcy because they couldn't find anybody to work at those jobs. But nonetheless, I find that, I literally don't believe it, and I'll tell you why. Those things definitely happen. It just means you had to increase the wages even more. Mm-hmm. But it is a very interesting question, is that what wage will an American be willing to do these kind of blue collar jobs? And I don't mean just regular blue collar, they are hard, they're super hard. You go pick grapes or tomatoes, it's in the middle of
backbreaking labor.
Yeah, in the middle of heat waves, etc. And so, but there's got to be a price, and does that mean that if at that price we wouldn't buy the wine, we wouldn't buy the crabs that they're doing? And that's never really been tested.
And look, to be honest with you guys, it's yes, it has to do with the amount of money a worker is getting paid, but there are other factors that don't get talked about enough or ever. For instance, migrant workers are much more mobile. They're willing to move from one place to another to take these jobs, when in reality, you know, American citizens, they buy homes. They're usually not stuck in one place, but they want to stay in one place. That's where their family is. That's where their lives are. And so that's one of the other reasons why some American workers don't take these jobs, because it means that they're going to have to move from one place to another.
So finally, look, I just want to separate out the issues a little bit, because I'm very curious about at what price Americans actually take these jobs. Mm-hmm. And I think we should test that, and if it means higher prices for crab and wine, okay, right? I don't want to diminish that too much, because some people forget the wine and the crab, but for real produce and things that you need for your daily diet, that is really important for low income people to have, right, have affordable food to eat. But I think as a society, we need to know how much the food actually costs. Either it costs a price that is higher and we can pay it, mm-hmm. or let's just be done with this farce and go, no, it turns out we need foreign workers. Because otherwise, nobody buys these products because they're too expensive. And the real cost is this, but in order for it to be that low, we need foreign workers. Let's figure that out. It tries, all they do is demagogue in politics.
Yeah.
On all sides, but obviously most especially these guys who are all on the warpath against immigrants. And finally, that goes to my second point, which is that this immigration issue about the green cards is in a lot of ways removed from that wage issue. So on a macro level, of course, immigration could affect wages. But in reality, the people that you're bringing in, it seems like a big number, a million people a year. But according to the last census, we have at least 330 million people in the country. By now, it'll probably be way higher than that. So it's a tiny fraction of the people in America. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those immigrants, like I said, create jobs. So in reality, are we a country of immigrants? And so if we are, we should do those immigration positions no matter what, especially legal immigration. And then on the wages issue, let's figure that out. And if we think, okay, we don't want more low wage workers coming in on visas,
right,
that's a separate issue that we should sort out. And none of the politicians so far have actually given a decent answer to that.
Yeah, it turns out immigration is kind of complicated.
Nobody knew that. Nobody knew that immigration was complicated.
All right, let's move on to another angle to this immigration story. White House senior advisor Stephen Miller had a press conference where he spoke to reporters about Donald Trump's and GOP senators' attempt at immigration reform, their immigration legislation. And he did get quite a bit of pushback and did get a little snippy with the reporters. So we wanted to share some of those exchanges with you. Let's start off with video number 5, where he talks about a little bit of hypocrisy within the Trump administration. Take a look.
Will the Trump organization stop bringing in foreign workers on visa programs to set an example for other businesses in the interim before this bill becomes law?
Well, as you know, the only way to have immigration policy work is it has to be national, it has to be uniform. You can't have different rules and different procedures for different companies. This bill, of course, doesn't deal with guest workers and temporary non-immigrant visas, which is, I think, what you're asking about. And that's a separate thing. But the president was clear, if you go back and look at his debate on this during the primary, where he said, as a businessman, my responsibility is to operate my business according to the laws of the United States as they exist. He said, as president, my responsibility is to pass laws that make sure we have an immigration system that prioritizes American workers.
So the question that he was asked, just to give you guys a little more context, was in regard to the fact that the Trump administration raised the cap on the number of foreign temporary workers who can come into the country. 3 days after that happened, Trump Properties applied for 76 guest workers to work on their properties. So it seems like there's a little bit of hypocrisy there when Trump claims that he wants to open up jobs for American workers.
Okay, so all you guys in the red hats, next time you get pissed about somebody hiring foreign workers, well, you know who to look to. It's Donald Trump. No, there's no excuses. You can go cry about it all you want, but patient zero is Donald Trump. The president who's constantly lying about putting America first, when it comes to his own properties, when it comes to the money he's making, he's like, I don't care about American workers. I was just messing with you because I think you're stupid. And I'm just gonna rub it in your face, even though I said it on the campaign trail, now I'm president. It would have been one thing, well, I didn't win, so what, who cares? Let's go back to doing the things that we do. I never meant it in the first place. Now you're president, you do all these branding and marketing around made in America, hire American, you do whole weeks around, you get into fire trucks and act like a child, okay? And at the end of the day, no, still, as president, hiring low wage foreign workers. So if you think that's a giant problem, then you hate Donald Trump. Just pick a side, because if you say it's no problem at all, hey, businesses gotta do what they gotta do, then you don't think it's a problem. If you think it's a problem, then you think Donald Trump is a flaming asshole for not hiring Americans. And let me give you a sense of how egregious and greedy he is. 76 workers, you can't find 76 Americans, and how much more is that gonna cost you? $2 an hour, $4 an hour? Remember at Mar-a-Lago, one of these estates, he increased subscription that you have to pay to be a member from $100,000 a year to $200,000. That can't afford $2 or $4 more per worker to make them American? No, he just doesn't care about you at all. And he certainly doesn't care about principles.
So I just want to jump in from, you know, look, we are obviously progressives. And so for those of you who are like, you guys just hate Trump and you're just criticizing him. No, he's getting criticism on this issue from the right as well. In fact, Numbers USA, which does not like immigration, released a statement in regard to what Trump did in increasing the number of foreign workers coming into the country. Let's go to graphic 11. This is a quote or a statement from them. They said, this is yet another example of the administration and Congress failing to keep the Trump campaign promise of putting American workers first. That's from Roy Beck from Numbers USA. He's the president of Numbers USA.
Yeah, that group is totally against immigration. So they love the press release today about limiting legal immigrants. All that talk about, oh, we don't want undocumented. No, they just don't want any immigrants. And even they acknowledge, yeah, the president is doing absolutely the wrong thing according to their ideology by go getting low wage workers that work in his properties. As always with the elite, different rules for you, different rules for them.
Exactly. Now let's go to other portions of Miller's press conference. In the next video, you will see him responding to Jim Acosta. This is where things get super snippy, and it's over the Statue of Liberty. Let's go to video 7.
What you're proposing, or what the president is proposing here, does not sound like it's in keeping with American tradition when it comes to immigration. The Statue of Liberty says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free. Doesn't say anything about speaking English or being able to be a computer programmer. Aren't you trying to change what it means to be an immigrant coming into this country if you're telling them you have to speak English? Can't people learn how to speak English when they get here?
Well, first of all, right now, it's a requirement that to be naturalized, you have to speak English. So the notion that speaking English wouldn't be a part of our immigration systems would be actually very ahistorical. Secondly, I don't want to get off into a whole thing about history here, but the Statue of Liberty is a symbol of liberty enlightening the world. It's a symbol of American liberty lighting the world. The poem that you're referring to that was added later is not actually part of the original Statue of Liberty, but more fundamentally,
The history, but more fundamentally, the history. I'm saying that the notion of the coming into this country. Jim, let me ask you a question. That sounds like some national park revisionism. No, the Statue of Liberty has always been a hope to the world for people to send people to this country, and they're not always going to speak English, Stephen. They're not always going to be highly skilled. I appreciate your speech.
So but Jim Acosta is exactly right about revisionism there, right? So all of a sudden the Statue of Liberty is not a beacon to the world. What? Of course it is. That's the whole point. That light is kind of pointing in the other direction. It's for America. It's okay. But no, we put it out in front of New York to welcome immigrants in. Trying to do historical revisionism on that is amazing. And the poem that you've all heard about, give me your poor, you're tired, that Jim Acosta quoted in part, you should read the whole poem. It's amazing and it's wonderful and it's what the core of this country is. Well, it's just a poem. I mean, really? We're talking about poems now? No. It said, give me your rich, your computer programmers and other people connected to rich donors. And everyone else that might vote Democratic, we vote no. If we apply that standard to the Italians that were coming in, the Irish that were coming in, the Jews that were coming in, the Polish, all those guys, right? And by the way, if you're in those categories, and it doesn't have to be any of those racial or ethnic categories, but people who came in two generations ago, come on, man, support your fellow Americans. You just went through it. So stand up and say, hey, when it's someone else, I want them to have the same chance that I had, my family had, my grandparents had. So if you're in that category, let's fight together, man, because they're trying to destroy the idea of America there. It isn't just for the rich, it's for all of us.
Yeah, and you know, since we're talking about this country only being open to the rich under the Trump administration, I mean, they do practice what they preach in that regard. I mean, they're not upset at Kushner Properties going to China and asking for $500,000 in investments in US properties just so they can get that golden visa. They have no problem with that, right? And think about how that actually does harm Americans, because as I've said time and time again, it artificially inflates the housing market to the point where people earning a decent living here in the US can't even afford to buy homes or apartments or condos. That's what's happening. And so if you wanna talk about real issues, those are the real issues that should be discussed. But of course, we have wealthy people in power right now that just take advantage of their position of power to make more money. They use it to their advantage. One final video from this press conference, because Jim Acosta was just really like heated, and I love it. So in this next one, Miller attempts to flip things around on Acosta. You decide for yourselves whether it worked.
This whole notion of, well, they could learn, you know, they have to learn English before they get to the United States. Are we just going to bring in people from Great Britain and Australia?
Jim, as actually, I have to honestly say, I am shocked at your statement that you think that only people from Great Britain and Australia would know English. It's actually, it reveals your cosmopolitan bias to a shocking degree that in your mind, no, this is an amazing moment. This is an amazing moment. That you think only people from Great Britain or Australia would speak English is so insulting to millions of hardworking immigrants who do speak English from all over the world. Jim, have you honestly never met an immigrant from another country who speaks English outside of Great Britain and Australia? Is that your personal experience?
Of course there are people who come in.
But that's not what you said. And it shows your cosmopolitan bias. And I just want to say...
It sounds like you're trying to engineer the racial and ethnic flow of people into this country.
Jim, that is one of the most outrageous, insulting, ignorant, and foolish things you've ever said. And for you, that's still a really... The notion that you think that this is a racist bill is so wrong and so insulting.
Wow. How could you possibly think that? Look, so let's just break down Stephen Miller's argument for 1 second.
You just have a cosmopolitan bias.
Oh, well, of course I do. So now, is it true that a person who comes into the country from China or maybe even Turkey can speak English before they get here? Of course, but that's not what Acosta's saying. What he's saying is you're giving a much bigger advantage proportionally to people whose native language is already English. So British, Irish, Australian, Canadian, etc. Now, of course, there is some percentage of people who come over from China or Africa that already speak English or Latin America, but it is a lower percentage of their population who would qualify with that standard. And by the way, it would have knocked out Acosta's lineage probably, and probably Stephen Miller's lineage. So when they came over, they spoke Italian or Yiddish, and we didn't say, oh no, that's it. Nope, grandma doesn't speak English. How the hell would you have spoken English coming from Sicily, right? And they figured it out because we're America. You get here, you roll up your sleeves and you go to work. And by the way, most of the people coming are coming for work. That's one of the complaints of the conservatives, like, oh, they're coming to take our jobs. So which one is it? Are they bums who have no skills and don't want to assimilate? Or are they working too hard? Make up your mind.
Also, I have to make a quick comment about this whole cosmopolitan bias thing that they keep bringing up over and over again. Okay, we're talking about an administration that's full to the brim of dudes who grew up and spent most of their time in New York. And then Stephen Miller himself grew up in Santa Monica, California. Like, really? I don't see you guys as like rural Americans that are looking out for the little guy.
And why would the rural American understand that they speak better English in China and Saudi Arabia than we think? Why is that a rural position?
Why is it weird.
A cosmopolitan position to say that, yeah, countries whose native language is English have a higher proportion of people who speak English? Why is that a cosmopolitan or a rural thing?
Yeah.
No, he just wants to say, oh, you're elitist. You know why he says that? Why he even brings that up? Because it's such a non sequitur. Why even bring it up? He's saying you're insulting the rural people who we're trying to appeal to with this bill.
That's right.
Who don't like foreigners. And you're a cosmopolitan, so you don't mind foreigners. And then, so it's actually not Jim Acosta that's bringing race into it. It's Stephen Miller. Stephen Miller is basically saying, like, we want to be anti-foreigner, and so you're not letting us make those racial decisions, because in your cosmopolitan world, oh, everybody likes one another, even though they're different.
I just want them to say it. I just want them to own up to who they are and what they believe, okay? It's not about looking out for Americans and American jobs. You don't care about that. Just say it. We don't like people from different backgrounds. We don't want it. We don't want Latinos. We don't want Asians, unless they're really rich and can go ahead and invest $500,000 in Kushner's properties or Trump's properties. But other than that, like, we just don't like them. We don't like them. It's so frustrating because, again, they are pandering to Americans who do need help, who do need this economy to improve for them. But they're just exploiting them and using them to push their xenophobic policies that really have nothing to do with the economy whatsoever. All right, we got to take a break. So let's do that. And when we come back, Trump reluctantly signing sanctions toward Russia. Hey guys, welcome back to the Young Turks.
Oh, that was interesting. Mm-hmm. We're back apparently. I expected music. All right, let me read some stuff to you guys. First of all, a couple of quick tweets for you. Rita Ann says, I lost jobs because of free trade, not because of foreign workers. So that's a very interesting point and a good one to bring up. Woke Poppy writes in, of course Americans don't want to do certain jobs like pick tomatoes in heat waves or marry Trump. That's why we need immigrants. Woke Poppy, you're pretty funny, dog.
He's definitely woke.
Yeah.
But are you a poppy?
Okay. All right, bring it down.
I know.
Okay. Poll from yesterday, in the spirit of bipartisanship, should Democrats work with Republicans on tax reform? 90% say no, we should not do the spirit of bipartisanship, and ain't nothing as such thing as a tax reform as tax cuts. And only 10% said yes. So that poll came in overwhelmingly. We framed the question to be the most beneficial to corporate Democrats and Republicans, and nonetheless, it was 90-10. No, hell no.
You did. You did frame the question kind of skewed in favor of what the conservatives would want. But I watched your video, which I thought was excellent. And if anyone watched that video, it doesn't matter how you framed the question.
Well,
so let's keep it real.
Well, you know, people can think on their own. Yeah. It's just that we agree. We're us progressives. We know they're bullshit tricks. Okay. Anyways, let me do a couple of quick YouTube super chat comments too. So if you're watching on YouTube, the super chat is the thing that if you contribute a little bit to the Young Turks, it moves your comment to a more prominent position where we can read it. It's a win-win. It helps the show, and you get your comments out there. So if you're using that, we appreciate it, and we'll read those. We're more likely to read those. Tristan Russello says Nancy Pelosi may have the support of her caucus, but not the voters, and that's absolutely right. And relates to that poll I was telling you about. Okay, Cole Napick says, LOL, this is my third super chat in about the past 30 minutes. It's just nice to be able to thank you personally, Cenk. Keep it up. Hashtag too strong. Thank you, Cole. And somebody. Leah, who is our chief of staff here, is having a baby. Mm-hmm. And somebody got her a too strong t-shirt, but it had the poop emoji for the baby. For the baby. So it might be too strong in that regard. Anyway, cute stuff. Ben Peck, shoptyt.com for the actual shirt. Ben Peck says, I think I enjoyed Anna's panel even more than her debate at Politicon. Always hear about how conservatives hate people shouting down speakers. They sure didn't seem to mind doing that to her yesterday.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Drums. Okay, all right, what's next, Anna?
All right. After nearly a week, Donald Trump has finally signed sanctions against Russia. And those sanctions also include countries like North Korea and Iran. But some were speculating that since Russia was included in the sanctions, Trump has been a little bitter about it. And keep in mind that Congress went out of its way to vote in such large numbers in favor of these sanctions that Trump won't be able to veto it. So Trump signed the bill after it passed Congress last week and landed on his desk on Friday. The White House later released a statement announcing that Trump signed the bill, though the president remained sharply critical of it. In fact, he said the following in regard to this bill. My administration particularly expects the Congress to refrain from using this flawed bill to hinder our important work with European allies to resolve the conflict in Ukraine, and from using it to hinder our efforts to address any unintended consequences it may have for American businesses, our friends, or our allies. Now, just to give you an idea of the vote, the House did pass these sanctions with a 419-3 vote on Tuesday, and then the Senate passed it with a 98-2 vote on Thursday, setting up a majority that could not or could override a presidential veto.
So basically, he didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
Even if he vetoed the bill, he just would have been embarrassed. They would have repassed it in overwhelming majorities. And then he would have gotten the downside of people saying, we knew it, you want to work with the Russians. And the bill would have passed anyway. So this way he says, no, I'm fine. I'll sign it.
Yeah.
He didn't have a choice. But he adds a signing statement saying, but I reserve the right to not follow it. So this is why it's important to be consistent on policy issues, guys, and ideology. So I hated when Bush did the signing statements. And when Obama did them, I said it's a terrible idea. Don't continue that precedent. Because it's basically the president going, the law that Congress just passed and I signed is like your opinion, man.
Right.
I might or might not follow it. And so now that Obama left that door open, Trump's like, thank you very much. I'll walk right through that door. And say about this bill, yeah, since I don't have a choice, I'm gonna sign it, but I hate it, and I'm not necessarily gonna follow it. Great.
Yeah. And also keep in mind, you know, just to add on to the fact that he hates it so much, usually when he signs anything into law, he has these big, like, events, right? What is it called? The
signing ceremony.
Yeah, signing ceremony. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, he signs it and then shows it literally like that.
I signed this terrible bill. Everybody look, take pictures of me. Okay, he didn't do that in this case.
Okay? Interesting.
Rex Tillerson is also pretty salty about all this. Let's hear from him.
Do you still believe that the passage, the overwhelming votes in Congress to pass that, was a sign that the American people want Russia to take steps to improve the relationship?
I think the American people want the two most powerful nuclear nations in the world to have a better relationship. I don't think the American people want us to have a bad relationship with a huge nuclear power. But I think they are frustrated. And I told President Putin when I saw him in the Kremlin in March, and I've told Foreign Minister Lavrov repeatedly, the situation's bad, but believe me, it can get worse. And it just did. Now, the action by the Congress to put these sanctions in place and the way they did, neither the president nor I are very happy about that. We were clear that we didn't think it was going to be helpful to our efforts, but that's the decision they made. They made it in a very overwhelming way.
Okay, so let's be clear about a bunch of things here. Number one, Rex Tillerson's telling you right there, we didn't want to sign it. We had no choice but to sign it. So later when he claims, I signed the sanctions bill, trying to take credit for it. Remember this moment where they hated it and told us they hated it. And they lobbied against it for the entirety of the time. And in usual Trump style, completely ineffectual, 98-2. How's your lobbying coming along? So now, when it is that bipartisan, it seems fairly clear what America's representatives want. So, but nonetheless, Tillerson now a politician, so he's like, no, I'll make up what the American people want. They want the same thing I do. Really, why? They didn't vote that way, right? And he's like, well, no, they want us to have a great relationship and lift those sanctions so ExxonMobil can make that deal. Really, is there polling on that by the American people, or did you just make that up? And most important of all, this guy's got a dog in the fight.
Yes.
He was the CEO of ExxonMobil. The number one deal affected by the sanctions is a $500 billion deal with ExxonMobil that Russia had. So the whole point of Tillerson coming in was to lift those sanctions. And if you don't know the background on it, it is amazing. Tillerson got a medal from Putin. He got a medal from Putin. And the guy who owns the largest oil company in Russia, one of the oligarchs, said that the sanctions were placed on him as well. He can't come back in the US. He's like, I don't like the sanctions because of the economic stuff, but I also want to go back to the US so I could ride motorcycles up and down the highways with my best friend, Rex Tillerson. Okay, the head of the Russian oil company said that about Tillerson. Okay, so yeah, of course, Tillerson and Trump don't want to do the sanctions. Because they wanted to lift it, because Trump owes the Russians, and Tillerson, why the hell did he give up being CEO to do some random Secretary of State thing he has no interest in? To lift the goddamn sanctions.
That's right.
That's why they're so mad right now.
But who cares about all these conflicts of interest, right? Why do the Democrats keep harping? By the way, Democrats aren't even really harping on it. We're harping on it. It's a problem because it means that they're going to focus on policies that benefit themselves and their corporate buddies as opposed to policies that actually benefit the American people. Anyway, there's another example of Tillerson doing so. So I want to turn to that. Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, for some reason is refusing $60 million that has been allocated to help mitigate the propaganda by Russians that is coming here to the United States. It's really, really strange. So let me give you the details on what's going on right now. So the Secretary of State is resisting the pleas of State Department officials to spend, I apologize, it's actually $80 million allocated by Congress for fighting terrorist propaganda and Russian disinformation. So the terrorist propaganda that they want to fight is actually ISIS messaging that's seeping into America right now. Mm-hmm. They're using social media in order to recruit individuals. It's a big problem. You know, the Trump administration has been fear-mongering about that for quite some time now. So why is it that $80 million has been allocated to help fight that, and Rex Tillerson hasn't taken them up on that offer, hasn't used it, isn't really doing much about it at all? So the Global Engagement Center is responsible for coordinating government-wide efforts to counter the online messages of terrorist groups such as the Islamic State. So this is the organization that has the money, and they keep trying to contact Tillerson and urge him to use it for what it's allocated for. Now, more than 5 months into his tenure, Tillerson has not issued a simple request for the money earmarked for the State Department's Global Engagement Center, $60 million of which is now parked at the Pentagon. Another $19.8 million sits untouched at the State Department as Tillerson's aides reject calls from career diplomats and members of Congress to put the money to work against America's adversaries. Again, Russia being one of them. So he's just like, no, I mean, whatever. But yeah, I'm concerned about ISIS and Russian disinformation. I guess I'll get to it at some point.
Yeah. So as usual, the press is going out of their way to present different possibilities as to why this might be happening. So they're like, well, maybe he's just disorganized. Wait, he was brought in because he's a CEO of a successful company, and the whole point of that is to be able to manage well. This is not like, oh golly gee, I couldn't manage well, so the one thing I couldn't approve was something that would work against the Russians, the ones who gave me a medal and that I had a $500 billion deal with right before I became Secretary of State. Now, and look, if you're a progressive and you're worried about, or a conservative, the Global Engagement Center, and they're trying to counter the propaganda that ISIS and Russia is doing, but you could say, hey, we shouldn't be doing propaganda as well. And what if they turn that in against, inside the US, etc. Those are legit concerns, right? But if we are going to do counter information from anybody in the world, I would imagine it would be ISIS. And given what Russia did in these elections, even if you don't think it's illegal, they certainly did a propaganda campaign and a misinformation campaign inside the US. No one, including all of Trump's intelligence agencies, disagrees with that. And so whether you think that's actionable against Trump is a different question, but Russia definitely did it. And so that would be the top two targets of counterattacks for the disinformation that's going on across the world. And so if you don't authorize that, you must have a different reason.
And by the way, they're not even good at hiding what that real reason is. In fact, let's hear from Tillerson aide R.C. Hammond. He suggested, this is an aide for Tillerson, okay? This is not some progressive or some liberal who hates the Trump administration. This is Tillerson's aide. He says, the money is unwelcome because any extra funding for programs to counter Russian media influence would anger Moscow, according to a former senior State Department official who works with Hammond. So,
okay, but I mean, you can't get any clearer than that. We wouldn't want to anger Moscow. I mean, they only did a massive misinformation campaign during our election. So, golly gee, we wouldn't want to anger them. Why don't you just say you're working for them? You know that there was a story that came out last week saying that Tillerson might want to leave soon. Wait, he just got there. Why would he want to leave soon? And again, the gullible press is like, oh, his aides and people close to him are saying because maybe he's frustrated with Trump and the chaos in the White House. No, his whole point was to get the sanctions lifted. Not only is it a $500 billion deal with Russia that ExxonMobil did, the revenue is potentially up to $9 trillion. $500 billion is just the amount of investment you need to start that deal, okay? So he's like, yeah, I came here for the goddamn $9 trillion. If I'm not getting it, and what happened last week? Why did they put out that statement last week of all weeks on Tillerson? Now, yes, the White House is a mess, but they've been a mess all along. No, last week is when these votes came in with both the House and the Senate overwhelmingly saying, we are not going to lift the sanctions and we're not going to let Trump lift the sanctions under any circumstances. Then all of a sudden Tillerson's like, well, I forgot about my lunch appointment. You know, maybe I got better things to do.
No, this is a disaster. And by the way, keep in mind that there are still many leadership roles within the State Department that have gone unfilled because of the incompetence, okay? And the fact that Tillerson had no interest in this job in the first place, right? He doesn't care about being Secretary of State. I mean, he might care about using it to his advantage, right? But it's not really working out for him, thankfully, because Congress is finally stepping up to the plate. But in this case, I mean, you have tens of millions of dollars at your disposal, so you could actually fight back against propaganda. Look, you want to look out for your little Russian buddies, that's one thing, right? Which I think is ridiculous and undemocratic. But if you want to really combat ISIS recruiting within this country, then why aren't you using that money? It's very strange. Finally, I just want to state that $60 million that's been allocated toward this effort is set to expire on September 30th. It's unclear what will happen after that. It could be transferred to the State Department by then, or they might be able to save that money for next year. I don't know. It's unclear.
But it is. It's very unlikely to be able to be used if they don't ask it by September 30th. So if they do ask it by September 30th, it's unclear if they have to spend it by then. Okay. But the bottom line is, Tillerson appears to be running out the clock, because if they don't ask for it by September 30th, they're almost certainly not going to get it. And so then he can turn around and go, oh, I mismanaged that, I guess. So we can't spend $60 million correcting the misinformation that my friends are putting out there in Russia, because I wouldn't want to anger them. And plus, they did get us into office.
So, it's just insane.
Brazen.
Yeah, Republicans real strong on national security. Anyway, we got to take one more break. When we come back, some fun political stories.
Fun. All right, back on the Young Turks. Matt Diedrich writes in, I wonder how pissed off Tillerson is at Trump for being a moron. Probably a lot, right? Because presumably Tillerson's way brighter than Donald Trump. And he figures there probably would have been a way to handle this mess a little bit better, so we could have actually gotten the sanctions lifted and we all could have gotten rich like we planned, you idiot. Mm-hmm. But Trump's like, oh, believe me, I'm handling it. Hey, dude, it was like 493-2 or whatever it was in this house. He's like, I'm on it. I'm on it. Okay, believe me, it's going to work great. Anyway, Andrew Schmidt and Susan Martin are our members of the day. TYTNetwork.com/join. Today, we have a wonderful old school. Malcolm's here, Brett's here. Ben might or might not come in, but it's going to be a great old school that I'm looking forward to. Aggressive Progressive tomorrow. Members get all the shows ad free. TYTNetwork.com/join. Okay, Casper, what's next?
All right. Oftentimes when it comes to dictators, they will talk about how everyone loves them, how they usually score perfectly in sports and bowling, and how they're just loved by everyone. Well, it's scary when you think about the fact that Trump thinks of himself in the same way. And I have two examples to point to just to prove my point. So recently, Donald Trump claimed that he got a little bit of, I guess, a compliment when it came to his immigration policies from the president of Mexico. Here's what he claimed, okay? He said, as you know, the border was a tremendous problem and they're close to 80% stoppage. And even the president of Mexico called me. They said their border, their southern border, very few people are coming because they know they're not going to get through our border, which is the ultimate compliment. So Trump made that statement, okay? Mm-hmm. So
oh, did that's
president,
interesting.
Yeah, did President Nieto call him and maybe they like they're friends now? No. The Mexican Foreign Ministry released a statement saying that Nieto has not recently spoken to President Donald Trump over the telephone. So the Trump administration was asked about this. What's going on? Seems like there's a little bit of a discrepancy here, and they responded by saying, yeah, okay, so we can see that he didn't call the president. But
he didn't call him, but I mean, can you rule out telepathic powers? You, of course not, right? I mean, it could be. Maybe they spoke in a previous life.
Yeah, so no. Huckabee Sanders said that they had an in-person conversation in Germany during the G20 summit.
No, they didn't. Yeah. Okay, so he's a pathological liar. He can't help himself. That's what I mean by pathological. He must lie at all times. So now my guess, and I know some folks like this, no one to the extreme that Donald Trump is, but people who lie when they don't need to, right? And what they'll do is they'll conflate things. So he probably had a conversation with Nieto back when he met with him long time ago, right? Maybe even during the campaign. And Nieto at some point probably talked about their southern border in a way to empathize with Trump and say, hey, look, we also have a problem on our southern border. Mm-hmm. And probably talked about the economy and how that's being affected, etc. Trump's like, got it. And then, so when they asked him about it, he's like, well, our border is doing so great. That's why because Mexico actually is tougher on their southern border. Mm-hmm. And a lot of conservatives point to that as a hypocrisy on Mexico's part. That's an interesting point. So he probably bragged about that. And so Trump was like, you see that? Their southern border is fine now because of me. And he told me how great I am. None of the rest of that happened, right? And he still can't get it through his head that back when he was not president, Nobody double checked the lies that he put out there nonstop.
No one cares.
You remember when he would pretend to be his own PR person and call in to like page six of the New York Post? He's such a petty child. Anyway, he'd be like, oh, you know, I just heard from sources that Madonna didn't turn down Donald Trump. Donald Trump turned down Madonna. Wait, aren't you Donald Trump? No, I'm Jason Baron or whatever, right? So he's been doing this shtick for a long time. He's such a goofball.
All right, so there's one example, and you might think, whatever, not a big deal. Okay, well, there's another example. It all happened in the same week. So as you all know, Donald Trump gave that speech to the Boy Scouts Jamboree event, and it was more like a rally. It became very political, very divisive rhetoric coming from him, and a lot of people were upset. And as a result, the Boy Scouts eventually finally released a statement apologizing for that speech and saying that they regret that it became so political. Well, Donald Trump doesn't see it that way. During an interview, he said, as evidence of how enthusiastic the Boy Scouts were about his speech, Trump claimed that he, quote, got a call from the head of the Boy Scouts saying it was the greatest speech that was ever made to them, and they were very thankful.
What a dumbass, man. You're not calling into page six. We can check. We can just call them and ask them if you called. We can look at the White House logs oftentimes, whether it's visitors or phone calls. Everybody's watching you. When are you going to figure that out? And he's like, oh no, I'll just make stuff up. They'll never figure it out. He's so painfully stupid, let alone liar.
Well, Time Magazine did want to check up on this, and here's what they found. They reported that a representative of the Boy Scouts of America said they're unaware of any call recently made by national leadership to the White House. In fact, 3 days after Trump gave his speech, they said they did apologize. That was from Michael Serbaugh, who is the chief scout executive for the Boy Scouts of America. He said that Trump's political rhetoric at the Jamboree was something worth apologizing for. And then he added that he sincerely regrets the politics, that politics were inserted into the scouting program.
So not only did they not say it was the greatest speech ever, they actually apologized to the Boy Scouts who heard it, because Trump did something wrong and injected political rhetoric into a speech that shouldn't have had any politics into it. But look, you know it, even if you're MAGA, you know that as soon as he said, oh, they called me and told me that it was the greatest speech they'd ever heard, you know that they didn't say that. I don't care what you claim, you know that somebody didn't call and say, oh my God, President Trump, that rambling weird speech that you gave, even if MAGA dudes liked it, was like filled to the rim with political rhetoric to 11 and 17 year olds. Greatest speech ever. By the way, this is an interesting phone.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
All right. So,
clown, liar, buffoon,
sad
baby.
All right. One final story before we go to our break. Donald Trump complains about fake news quite a bit. And so as a result, he has decided to roll out his own version of fake news on social media. So since he likes to employ his family members, he has decided to hire Laura Trump, who's Eric Trump's wife, to do a propaganda show on Facebook.
Oh, great.
And so the first video was recently released, and it is awesome. Let's show it to you.
I bet you haven't heard about all the accomplishments the president had this week, because there's so much fake news out there. We wanted to give you a glimpse into his week. First up this week, let's talk about the president's salary. Again, the president has donated his salary. His second quarter salary has now been donated to the Department of Education. Again, this is a president who is putting America before himself. I'm so proud of that. Jobs, jobs, jobs. The unemployment rate is at the lowest point it has been since 2001. That is quite an incredible fact. Again, we saw the Dow hit an all-time high this week. The stock market is up. The economy is booming, ladies and gentlemen. And speaking of jobs, Foxconn is a company who has promised up to 13,000 new manufacturing jobs in Wisconsin. The president also met with some incredible veterans this week in Ohio, giving his thanks to them for their service to our country. Also this week, the president got to meet with ICE and NYPD officers to talk about cracking down on MS-13 gangs. Thanks for joining us, everybody. I'm Laura Trump, and that is the real news.
It's missing a little something that the Trump folks had when they were doing it during the primaries.
Sarabies!
Yeah, that was definitely a little more fun.
If you had a guy in the background yelling Sarabies, that would have made the show infinitely better.
Yeah, you know, there were a few things that she missed. So all right, I don't even know if it's been verified that Trump has donated his second quarter salary to the education department. But she missed like one little caveat to that, which is the fact that Trump's budget proposal includes a $9.2 billion cut to the department. Oh, that's weird. Is that fake news? Because it came from Trump.
Okay, so let's grant her that it's correct. Okay. And it's a marketing ploy and a good one, right, that Trump is giving away his salary. So that's $100,000 in that quarter that goes $100,000 into the Department of Education, $9.2 billion, not million, billion out of the education department. And you're bragging about what you're doing for the education department. So and the whole premise is, look, by the way, I'm about to defend it in a second too, so that's fun. But the whole premise is preposterous. Now, you know, you all saw that fake news out there. Now, wait a minute. He did fire Reince Priebus. That's not fake that he fired him. He no longer works there. Anthony Scaramucci admits that he said all those things to Ryan Lizza about all the different genitalia that people are filleting throughout the White House. Okay. And then Scaramucci was fired. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't do that. You guys did that. And there's nothing fake about it. And so their constant reference to the facts as fake news, again, I know, like, you got to be a special breed of MAGA to be like, I know that isn't true, but I don't care. Like, I don't.
Oh, they exist.
I don't care about the truth. I don't care about facts.
Yeah.
They're not remotely interesting to me. If I see facts, I'll call them fake news because I like propaganda. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, then fine. You're in that category. But all those things did happen in the real world. Okay, now the part that I'm going to defend them on is, I don't mind them putting out their own version of stuff and making their own case. I actually, to be honest, think Obama should have done it more. So, like, now they're factually challenged here on the Department of Education on the unemployment numbers and the economy is booming. Why do you think that is? You think, was it not booming and Trump came into office and he turned it around right away and you show me the different programs he used to turn around? No, it was already booming when he came in. For example, when Obama came into office, we were losing 800,000 jobs a month because Bush had destroyed our economy. I'm told supply side economics works. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it didn't seem to work when it pulverized jobs in America.
Right.
Obama turned that around and started adding jobs at a very significant pace. Now, I don't think, look, I got issues with that and I think that all the jobs don't pay enough. But if you're looking at unemployment numbers, Obama did a great job on that. Handed it off to Trump. What has Trump done? Almost nothing about that. So now he says all the things I got handed by Obama that I want an excuse for. Oh, I haven't figured out what to do with North Korea. Oh, that was Obama. I can't believe Obama left that mess behind. Right? Iraq, Afghanistan, Obama. The economy. No, he didn't leave that. That was me. Right? Now, so there, he's not right about that. But Obama didn't do something like this. He wasn't aggressive at all. So his success in with the unemployment numbers and the economy, etc., he would whisper it. Mm-hmm. Whisper. Now, I don't think he should have put Malai out there or some other Obama out there. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. Anyway, to do this kind of stuff and to do it in kind of an amateur hacky way. But I wish Obama had, for the progressive positions he cares about, if he cared about them, had gone on a much more thorough campaign to argue for them, to fight for them. I would have brought in charts. I would have done explanations. I'd do it every single week if I was if I was advising the president, make your case. So in this case, they're trying to make their case. Yes, it's filled with a lot of misinformation and annoying rhetoric, but I don't begrudge the effort overall.
So I don't know what you think about this or what Americans think about this, but if I feel like if I would never want to be president, but if I were ever president, White House press secretary, sit down, okay? I'll maybe use you once in a while if I'm super busy, but I can't talk to people. But I want to do the press conference.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do a press conference every week where I lay out what's going on in the country, right? The fact that we have the president do like the State of the Nation speech every once in a while drives me crazy. No, no, you should be doing State of the Nation speeches every week. If you want transparency, we should hear from the president. Stop hiring like a freaking gigantic bureaucratic communications department, okay? I don't wanna hear from some schmo that worked as a PR agent in the past. I wanna hear from you, make your case.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like that would be a better way to handle it. In terms of this like propaganda stuff on social media, sure. I mean, I would, again, I think it's much more effective in the form of a press conference that's televised for the American people.
Yeah. Funny though, we did note earlier in the show that they decided that they would not fund an a campaign to spread to counter misinformation coming from ISIS and Russia, but they are. Apparently do have the time to do a misinformation campaign that helps them here. Fighting ISIS, pain in the ass. Russia, we don't wanna make them angry. But wait a minute, propaganda, we could do that. Right? So, and again, I say propaganda, but look, Obama did a, I think he used to do the YouTube thing every week. So everybody's, you know, our side calls it information, their side calls it propaganda and vice versa. Again, so bottom line on this is that I don't mind that they're trying this. I just wish they'd be a little bit more honest about it.
Right.
All right, we gotta take a break here. We do have amazing stories coming up for you guys, including now we can manipulate genes.
That story is for tomorrow, sorry.
Oh, okay.
I know. I had a lot on my plate today. That's a complicated story that I'm doing more research on. We will cover it tomorrow.
Okay, but when we come back, affirmative action. So I don't know if you guys remember, I'm conservative on affirmative action. I'll show you what the Trump administration is doing, and I'll tell you whether I agree with it. We'll be back.